Hi, I'm Stuart Spinks and welcome to episode 280 of my podcast, Beekeeping Short and Sweet. This week, a slight change to normal programming. I'm joined by Nikki and Katerina, who've come to talk about the very important work that they do working with the charity Bees Abroad. Beekeeping Short and Sweet, a beekeeping podcast for the inquisitive beekeeper with a short attention span. A beekeeper, in fact, just like me. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you're all well. A slight change to the podcast this week. Sit back, grab your morning breakfast coffee and a slice of toast, and listen to my conversation with the lovely people from Bees Abroad. Bees Abroad are a UK-based charity working directly with communities and what they call in-country partners to deliver beekeeping mentoring and training programs. Today, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Nikki Backers and Katerina Procopiou from Bees Abroad to hear more about the work that they do. And you're both very welcome. Nikki, do you want to kick off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do with Katerina?
It's my honor, Stuart. Thanks for having us here. With Bees Abroad, we're always excited to get a chance to meet new people and tell as many people about our mission. And so your podcast here is a great venue for that. So my background is kind of interesting, I think, anyways. Like you said, my name is Nikki Backers. I'm located in Southern Michigan. I have been a beekeeper for over 20 years, and I've been a beekeeper in several different countries and in different states along the United States. I started my beekeeping journey pretty early on in my early 20s, and I was going to college for a degree in psychology and philosophy, and I was in Northern California at the time and fell in love with beekeeping. And like most people probably do when they complete college, realize they'd spent an exorbitant amount of money doing something that they were not going to make a career out of. So yeah. I ended up developing a product line and getting involved with honey and, you know, all the different aspects of it, and brought that my little small business up, and then wanted to know more. Once you start beekeeping, it's like an addiction. You want to know everything about it and all the different ways to do it and the different, people that do it. And so I went to Europe. I lived there for a year, traveled Europe pollinating on a large organic beekeeping farm there. And then came back to Northern California, went to Costa Rica and worked for Costa Rica Meadery down there, made mead, worked with the Africanized bees, lived in an amazing treehouse, had a great time. And it was down there that I actually met my business partner, and we actually ended up coming back to the Midwest and the Michigan area, developing my small business. And it was during that time when I was getting my small business that was starting to grow, I started to become more aware of that I wanted beekeeping, or at least I wanted to be a part of beekeeping that was global because of my travels and and how important it was. So I started to look into companies, and one of the organizations I fell in love with was Bees Abroad. And this is many, many years ago. And I thought to myself, wow, to be involved in an organization like that would just be a dream job. So we'll skip ahead to many, many years later to where I am now the supporter care manager for my dream job. And I'm new at it, but I'm enthusiastic, super excited about what we do, the programs we offer, the reach and the care that we take in this organization. And so I am starting to find my feet within the company and try to bring positivity and support to our donors and our team.
Fantastic. And Katerina, how about yourself?
Hi, Stuart. Well, thank you again. Also for me, I echo Nikki's words. We're very grateful that we have the chance to be here. My name is Katerina Procopiou. I'm CEO of Bees Abroad. I am from Cyprus, which is also where I'm talking to you from at the moment. Beekeeping for me has always been a hobby, and I started this with my grandfather from a young age. And then I took it on again when I was in the UK, at which point I was practicing as a mechanical engineer. That was actually my career before being here. And then my journey with Bees Abroad started as a volunteer. I was a volunteer partnership manager for a couple of projects in Uganda. And I had the amazing opportunity to also visit those projects and the individuals that were part of them. And then about a year ago, Bees Abroad, which by then, up until that point, was 100% volunteer organization. That was the turning point where we decided as Bees Abroad to start taking some people on more permanently to professionalize what we do so that our impact can go further. And here I am now as the CEO and talking to you today about Bees Abroad.
That's fantastic. You mentioned Uganda, and obviously Bees Abroad, you know, it's in the title. Whereabouts abroad from the UK, abroad from the States, Cyprus, whereabouts do you focus your work?
Yes. So throughout the more than 30 years that Bees Abroad has been around, we've had projects in across 15 different countries, but we had a strategic decision made a while ago to focus on six particular ones in Africa in order to drive more impact. So at this moment in time, most of our projects are focused in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Sierra Leone, Ghana, and Nigeria. So we do have some satellite projects elsewhere as well, including Rwanda and Nepal. But these six countries are our main focus at the moment.
Okay. And obviously, we're all beekeepers, so we're all enthusiastic about our beekeeping. But why, maybe I'll throw this question at Nikki, why choose beekeeping as a way to support communities and individuals in those countries abroad?
Well, I feel like there's so many ways to answer this question, but the bottom line of it is that the poverty and the marginalization of the communities in which we work in allows beekeeping to offer an opportunity which might not otherwise be available with the growing honey market and the middle class. So it's also, I think, once people get involved with beekeeping, you start to see that one bee alone can't make a difference. It takes the whole hive. So these marginalized groups also benefit from the ability of knowing that when Bees Abroad becomes involved, they're part of a larger group. We don't just drop off supplies. We don't donate money. We donate sponsorship for, you know, equipment and support through mentorship in our programs. So when we're working with a group, we're not just saying, here, become a beekeeper, enjoy. We're there for the long haul to make sure that these projects are successful, that these groups can be successful. So we're drawn from the inspiration of one honeybee alone doesn't do much. But as a group, we can do great things.
Maybe if we have time, maybe we could talk about the kind of equipment that they use in one of the projects. Maybe we could talk about a project example. But how do you go about choosing the individual groups that you work with in those countries?
I think the keyword here is groups. So we never work with individuals. It's always with groups or communities. And this is very important because we have found through our experience that these are the projects that are the most successful. When groups have governance and operate as a single unit, just like a colony of bees would, right? The impact and the success is much bigger and much more secure. But then maybe to further sort of add to that, we tend to prioritize groups that would require that opportunity in order to unlock the potential. So we very often focus with groups that are otherwise disadvantaged or marginalized. That can be whether they're female in a male-oriented environment, whether they're disabled or they have a long-term disability or illness like albinism is one of the groups we work with, the women with albinism, or just discriminated. Perhaps they have HIV. So this is one of the three pillars we follow. So one is creating that opportunity. Does this group, will this unlock a huge potential for the group if beekeeping is something they get the opportunity to learn? The second part that we focus on is what would the impact be economically? Would this generate an income that's substantial for the group? Is there an access to the market? Sometimes they're very isolated and rural. So even if we put their hopes up with beekeeping, they might not actually realize that goal of an additional income for their communities. So that's a factor we do look into. And finally, of course, the environment. Apart from the fact that the group, again, needs to understand that the bees need to be respected as part of a bigger ecosystem, they need to be committed to not only the honey part of it, but to the advocacy. You know, we discuss about pesticides and bushfires that are practices in farming in those areas that we are in. So we do look for groups that usually engage in other activities relating to the environment, or that are at least aware and sensitive to the fact that the environment is important and should be protected. So as long as groups fit in this criteria and beekeeping is a viable option for the region, that would be a project that we would most likely go ahead with. That's how we select the groups.
Cool. Oh, that's fantastic. So when you take the projects into those communities, do you have a kind of a standard formula that you use for each of those projects, or how do you approach those projects?
It's interesting because we don't have like a specific standard per se. We're going to look at the whole thing, and we're going to make sure that the project is based on our core values. We're going to make sure that it's a collaborative project, that it's one that's community led. We're looking for something that, you know, affects the most amount of change within a small investment or in a small, you know, sort of startup. So we want to take every project that comes to us and give it the benefit of the doubt of looking at it as an individual, but at the same time, trying to also keep our eye on the bigger picture, making sure that it's going to do the most amount it can in that small area.
Yeah, no, and that makes perfect sense, really. So in terms of the project, very often I feel that sometimes we go into these places and dictate very much what's going to happen. But do you manage the projects locally, or do you have somebody in the local area that manages them? And is there some way that those communities then are able to share those new skills with the other local communities, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic question, because I do think that it's very easy to fall in that pitfall of thinking you know what's best for each community you're working with.
Exactly. Yeah.
But let's be honest, the best people to train on beekeeping are the people that are there. So we always operate with our local delivery partners, which will be experienced beekeepers who have trained before. And they would, again, be organizations. So we wouldn't necessarily work with individuals unless we don't have another option. But they would either be an NGO that's on the ground, or they will be an association. So we'll always work with a group of experienced beekeepers that are local to where the projects are. What we do have is volunteers that work remotely. So they would be at the moment mostly in the UK. We're currently looking for Nikki. Nikki wants a project to take on as well. So they help us with tracking the progress of those projects, making sure they're still on track. And of course, reporting back to our supporters that have donated and supported these projects, making sure that everything is covered. But when it comes to the actual training, the governance on the ground, that would be the local delivery partners. And of course, a lot of this responsibility falls on the group of participants themselves to come back to us and tell us what's working and what's not. So that's where we work on a very collaborative manner with the individuals that are in our group project.
Can you give an example of maybe somebody that has taken on that training role for us, so we can get an understanding as to maybe what they've done and how it's working out for them?
As Bees Abroad, the goal is to empower those communities themselves. We want to see them continue their own development and their own sharing of knowledge. So naturally, we want the trainees to become trainers if they have the capability and the will and they want to. A very, very good example in Uganda is Christine. So Christine is from a village called Kisoro, and a region, sorry, called Kisoro. She had traveled to a different region to be trained with Bees Abroad on beekeeping. Upon being trained and then practicing herself, she then took it on to train her community, the women in her community, and it's called now the Jairi Women Beekeepers, to create again a little organization of female beekeepers in her community.
Right. Yeah.
And because she's been doing that, we acknowledge that as Bees Abroad, that she has taken that initiative. And when a new project came along in the region, we actually asked Christine to take it on as our trainer for that particular new project. So we do want to see that growth. We want to see individuals continue that.
Brilliant. And it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, that you train somebody up. And very often I find that the best way to learn more detail in a topic is to actually teach it. So she's probably benefiting from that as well. So I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. So in terms of the projects, can you give me an example, and all of the beekeepers that are listening to the podcast, can you talk us through maybe an example of one of these projects that's maybe gone from start all the way to successful fruition?
Sure. Gosh, there's so many of these successes to pick from. I think one of the most, to me, heartwarming and sort of biggest success beyond the economic is the school in Rwanda called Umutara Deaf School. So we work with the school to include beekeeping as part of the curriculum for the students who are impaired in hearing. So what we've done is we've trained the teachers to give training on beekeeping. And the students during their last 2 years go through that training. What happens at the end of school when they graduate, the top three or four students that show engagement and proactive interest in continuing beekeeping are then supported by Bees Abroad with equipment that is then taken back home with them to their village, but also a three-year mentorship and support system to make sure that they're successful. What we've seen there is a transformation of mindset and their role in their villages, in their community. Typically, when you're disabled, especially in hearing, because also to communicate becomes very difficult, these individuals are considered a burden to their family and to the community because money needs to put into them. They're not able to help in any way. They're considered very often useless. Now, by going back with a skill that is their own and with a way to generate income for their family, they become productive members. They become actually essential part of the family and sometimes even more important than the rest because they're actually bringing money in. Beyond that, of course, the community can start now seeing that even though they're disabled, there is a way for them to contribute and be part of the community as a member that brings something and is respected. In this particular project, we've seen this happen. We've had 10 students that we've supported beyond school, and we have seen this happen in almost all villages that they've gone back to. And in a very special case, we've had an adult visit the school requesting to also be trained in beekeeping. This was a deaf adult who found that the skill the students had was so valuable that they were requesting if they could also be trained. So they
Fantastic.
Can be beekeeping, yes.
It's always nice, I think, if you've got somebody maybe from a disadvantaged group, be it a disability or an economic group, that kind of thing, where you can put a spotlight on somebody that despite the challenges that they've had, they've been able to succeed in something. And it gives encouragement to the others to get involved and know that it's possible for them to be successful as well. So that's it's absolutely fantastic. Now it's a really nice story. I guess in terms of my beekeeping and the beekeepers that watch my videos and listen to the podcast, they're always more interested in the things that I get wrong and the way things fail, because if I make a mistake,
well, you learn.
they always tend to learn from my mistakes. Well, I hope that they learn from my mistakes, and they can be a better learning experience than all of the successes that you have. With that in mind, do Bees Abroad ever come up against a barrier that maybe causes a project to fail? And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we're not perfect, so it's not like we can always have successes. I think one of the things that we've gathered over time is understanding forage and environment. So we've come to a point where we do assessment visits that include an understanding of whether beekeeping is viable. So from that point of view, it will be very clear for us very early on whether bees will colonize the hives, whether we will succeed in having that. Often where it becomes a little bit more, let's say, intricate or requires a bit more investigation is in the expectation management and the group's commitment to the project. So what we do is we have assessment visits that mean that our local delivery partner visits the group to understand and reassess whether the group is committed to the project. We have had cases before, especially there's a particular one I'm thinking of in Uganda, where the expectations of the group were that income would be generated much sooner than in reality. We all know when you put empty hives out, you're not going to get a significant amount of honey for at least the first 3 years. I mean, you cannot say you're going to make that money yet. So for us, the challenge is, you know, how do we make sure these people, this group who need money essentially urgently, understand that this is something they need to have patience for and they need to work at for 3 years, but that the reward is worth it. You know, we need to keep that in mind. So we have had a group where the expectation was that the income was going to come much sooner. And when it didn't come, there was a lot of disappointment and disengagement. So that group then just slowly stopped beekeeping. Of course, that's where we go back to our assessment visits to make sure that this is understood from the get-go, that the group understands that there is going to be a long period of time of no realization of those returns just yet.
It sounds very familiar to just normal backyard beekeeping, where beekeepers get a nucleus colony, pop them into a beehive and anticipate 6 or 7 supers of honey off them in their first season. And sometimes it doesn't quite happen like that. So I understand exactly what you're saying. In terms of the equipment, before we move on, in terms of the type of equipment that these communities are using, could you just describe some of the equipment that they use? Is it hives as we have here in the UK or in Cyprus and the States?
Yeah, so they use, most of our projects use top bar hives. They are much easier to site and manage, but also the colony size tends to be smaller in those countries. So although we could get something like a Langstroth, it's significantly more expensive and not particularly better. Right. In terms of the yield or management of the bees. We do have groups that use traditional beehives. Those are usually in the form of long bamboo vases that are sort of put together with mud and dung. And some groups tend to prefer those over the top bar, but they're about the same size and they wouldn't necessarily be any bigger than the top bar.
Right. No, it's really interesting. And those people that have watched my videos and listened to the podcast will know that I've messed around a little bit with a top bar hive. So I do understand how they work and, you know, how they can perform, really. In terms of how beekeeping associations could get involved and maybe get you guys to go along and act as speakers and teach them a little bit more about what's available, is that something that you guys could do?
Oh, absolutely. We love to interact with potential supporters and donors. And I guess now's a good time to probably sort of drive some interest towards our website. So if you go to the beesabroad.org.uk website, on there, you can reach out to me. You can sign up for our newsletter. And when you reach out to me, you can say, I have a gardening group. I have a 4-H group or a farm group. Really, a ladies group. It doesn't matter. If you'd like us to come discuss what we're doing, we'll come talk to you. We'll go over kind of what we do and what we want to, what our goals are to achieve. And the talks are free, but we're gonna graciously accept any donations that we can at the time. Absolutely. To go towards our organization. This is a donation-based organization. So it's the kindness and strength of our followers and supporters that makes this whole thing go around and being able to support. And I also wanted to circle back to the materials used for the beehives and stuff really quickly. On our website, you're going to see a lot about our projects. On our social media through Facebook and Instagram, you're going to see a lot of pictures and videos. We have some amazing content right now on our social media from Cameroon, and they have the traditional bamboo slatted hives, which I find just fascinating and interesting how they're held together. And when you open them up, how the comb is inside of it. So again, just to, you know, reiterate it, on the website, there's a lot of great content that kind of shows what we're doing, and there you can reach out to me on that. I can give you my email address as well on here if you'd like, or I can just drive the traffic to the website. Either way, we want to talk to you guys, anybody, and just get the word out. And we want people to know we're not in hiding. We're here to talk to you.
Fantastic. I imagine there will be, certainly here in the UK, there'll be a lot of associations, beekeeping associations in particular, that would love to have you along, I guess, via a Zoom type presentation. Most associations these days are set up for that. So, you know, it would be fantastic. And finally, the beekeepers that are listening to this podcast, I'm sure they're really interested in trying to find ways to support the work that you guys are doing. So how can beekeepers that are listening to the podcast support the work that you guys are doing? I know that online there's donations available, but is there anything specific coming up that you'd like to maybe promote to the listeners of the podcast?
Absolutely, Stuart. And thank you for asking. Yes, we have what's called the Big Give coming up November 28th through December 5th. And all of the donations received during that time are going to be doubled. So it's a very exciting time for us and a very exciting time to give your donations. So whatever you donate is going to be doubled coming into us during that time. So we're very, very excited about it. If you go to our website, which is beesabroad.org.uk, you can see that all of that information is going to be available right there and how to get involved with the Big Give. But I also know that people get a lot of value in being involved in sort of hands-on with what projects are going on. And so one of the great things that we're getting off the ground right now, it's a little new, but it's a very unique experience that only Bees Abroad is able to offer. And what that is called hive twinning. And essentially that allows you to be a beekeeping pen pal. Being a hive twin, you graciously donate, I think it's 60 pounds. And so it allows you to take hives that you may have in your garden or in an apiary yard anywhere and twin them with a hive that could be in any one of our locations from Uganda, Tanzania, Ghana. And we'll try to tailor it to something specific as much as that you're interested in as a beekeeper to something that's going on somewhere else in the world. And we'll give you updates on how each other's doing and how each other's bees are doing. And it really, you know, kind of give you that closeness and that sort of inclusivity of being involved in something while the donation of the 60 pounds is going to help support and develop that, you know, that hive in that other area.
That sounds really interesting.
Oh, I signed up for it immediately. I was very excited to do it.
Is it also possible for beekeeping associations to sign up to it?
Absolutely.
Or businesses as well, so companies sign up as members?
I'm going to quickly add, we do have some hotels in London especially that have twinned their beehives with ours. So if anyone's in London, that would be like the Ritz, for example, and the Hilton have done that. Yeah, and it's all about, you know, what kind of cause would you want to support, or maybe a country, or you don't mind. But the idea is that if you do want to support, but you still want to keep that relationship and get those updates that are more personalized, that's something that's very possible.
Yeah, fantastic. And if anybody wanted to go one step further and, dare I say, volunteer to help out with the project.
I hope you would not just dare, but take that leap of faith forward and get a hold of us through the website. There is also, when you get on our website, you'll see a volunteer section. You'll see a donation section, a lot of information. Don't be shy. They call me the supporter care manager. That means I am here to support and care about everyone. So I care about our team. I care about our donors, our volunteers, and I'm super friendly. I want to hear from you guys. I want to hear what you think you can even bring to the table. Don't be shy. You know, maybe it's not something that would work right now, but would work later on. We're open for conversations. We're open for collaborations. You know, we view it as having that global perspective. And I feel like any beekeeper, if you've never left your farm and you're a beekeeper, being a beekeeper, it brings you the perspective of knowing that you are part of the global community. Knowing by looking at that group of bees that they don't do it on their own. They do it as a group. And it gives you that awareness that even though you may never have left the UK or never left Michigan or whatever, you just being in that beehive and seeing that collaboration, you know that you're part of something bigger and more than you. And we want to try to spread that word of collaboration throughout the whole globe.
Excellent. And volunteering doesn't mean that I have to get on an airplane to Uganda or anywhere, does it?
No, it doesn't. We hope you'd want to be that adventurous. But if not, there's so many ways to volunteer. You know, you could do your own talks and gather donations and donate the money. Sure. Maybe you have an item that you are interested in selling and giving part of the proceeds to Bees Abroad. We are open to hear any ideas from anyone. I'm not saying that we'll be amenable to it, but I will definitely listen. I'm here to help.
it's been fantastic having you along for the podcast. I hope that you've enjoyed sharing that with us. And I wish you all the very best with your big give, the double donation that's coming up at the end of the month. Is that the end of November?
December 5th. Yep.
Yeah, so end of November. What I'll do is I'll list all of the information that we've talked about on the podcast notes, which will be published, so people will be able to link through to your website. And with that, I'd like to say thanks very much, Katerina and Nikki. And hopefully we'll meet up sometime and we can share some more beekeeping experiences.
Sounds fantastic, Stuart. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Don't forget to check out my website, www.norfolk-honey.co.uk. And for my latest videos and podcasts with more updates, tips and techniques, it's the same Patreon page, www.patreon.com/Norfolk Honey. And remember, I'm Stuart Spinks, and that was Beekeeping Short and Sweet.